Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, starring the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
I've been better.
You've been better. We decided, before we came on the air, that we were going to do a grab bag of miscellaneous things. And so you've been better than you are today. So, what happened? How come you're not full of your usual vim and vigor and enthusiasm?
You know, I think it starts with not talking with you often enough. I mean, you just brightened my day, and I hadn't had enough time with you, and that's part of the problem.
But that made my day.
Yeah. I think, really, it's 2 o'clock on my time, and I think I haven't had a breakfast until about 1:30.
So what time did you get up in the morning?
6:30.
So from 6:30 till 1, nothing to eat.
Right. I had a drink, I had a couple of glasses of water, my usual salty water, mineral-loaded water, had my amino acids, I take those in the morning, had my zeolites, take that in the morning. So I've had a couple of glasses of water, but that's it. No calories.
No, that's not good.
No, it's crazy. It's stupid. It's precisely what gives people cravings in the evening. When you're experiencing cravings, ask yourself, what did I not eat 12 hours ago? Because especially when you have carb cravings, it's because you haven't had proteins 12 hours earlier. So sure enough, I'll be casting myself at 8 p.m. for... I'll be hunting for a piece of bread or something,
It's kind of weird that you say that, because we've talked many times in previous podcasts about my cravings and running around at 8 o'clock is the time where I run around and I bang every door on my cabinets looking for something like a taco chip or a chocolate bar,
any
variation of those, right?
Yeah.
There could be carrots in the fridge, more carrots than I could eat. I don't want that, right?
No.
But what I've been doing the last few months is hot yoga. That's not news, but I've been going to the either 6 or 8 o'clock class.
Oh, yeah.
And so it just blows out any desire for anything other than to come home and collapse.
Yeah. this is the craving controlled by jail.
That's right.
You put yourself completely out of reach by physical restraints, right?
Yeah, and not only that, we're doing stuff in a hot, unpleasant environment. We're doing things that are unpleasant and awkward and take my full focus not to fall over. So there's just no room for any of these craving thoughts. And it was just kind of funny, because as you were thinking, I was thinking last night, I went from 8 to... So, of course, you can't eat about an hour and a half to 2 hours before.
Otherwise, you throw up, right?
Yeah, it's really bad.
Yeah.
And I've done that. I thought, I can get away with this, right? I've gone...
No.
And I go in, and you're upside down, and whatever you stick in your stomach is coming out your mouth,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm there swallowing, trying to hold it up, and I'm feeling really, so you do that a couple times, you never do it again. I went tonight, and I thought, it was really hot, and it was really hard, and I come home and just, put around a little bit, because I can't just go straight to bed.
Yeah.
I'm still sweating stuff out. And then I hit the sack, I'm just sound asleep. And so
yes.
I'm finding that's a really, and it's breaking the habit, because I'm doing it like 2 or 3 times a week. And it just interferes with my habit of going for the craving. But it never occurred to me that the 8 o'clock craving could be because of an 8 a.m. not eating enough.
Right. And, of course, the metabolic type person should be eating to their metabolic type. If you're a fruit and veggie person, you should be eating at least some fruits and maybe some coconut and some other good things. If you are a... fat and protein metabolic type, well, you definitely should be feeding yourself a hearty breakfast.
Right.
Hemp, seed or hemp protein or an omelet with eggs, or if you're okay with it, raw eggs in a smoothie, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've never been able to handle those raw eggs.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, but there are many people who can handle it just fine.
All right. Okay, so we've talked about me, how I avoid my cravings, and now you're talking about your day being kind of rough because you didn't start it off properly.
Well, you know, at some point I just start feeling miserable because I have gone into the acidic cycle. And I really think that when you're going acidic, your mind is producing really sour, negative, depressing thoughts. You know,
right.
Like you look out the window and your hormonal balance is off, and never mind, the sun is shining, God damn it, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day, we're sitting at the beach, and I'm just furious.
Yeah, what the heck am I doing here at the beach? I should be doing something different, right?
And you know, it's really true. Like, oftentimes our moods are so dependent upon what we've been sticking in our mouth or not sticking in our mouth. And I was just thinking of the other day, a friend of mine had a staff Christmas party, and I was amazed at how many 6 to 8 year old kids were there. And of course, what they did was they, you know, candy canes and cakes and everything else, and
you know,
they were all really good. And then there was this one period where they were just running up and down the walls, and I thought, oh yeah, it wasn't that long ago we were feeding them full of sugar, so big surprise,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the grandmother's revenge. She brings you candy, she comes for a visit, leaves your child with some candy, and leaves.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go, payback. But you know what's interesting for me is I found that whenever I eat fermented veggies for, you know, my lunch or, you know, mid-afternoon meal or whenever that I eat it, no cravings.
Okay, so what is a fermented veggie?
Well, it's known as cultured or fermented. Yes, sauerkraut is the old name for it, but you must remember to distinguish between the properly fermentation-made sauerkraut versus this stuff that's vinegar and pickle juice that's sold these days as sauerkraut in stores. This needs to be stuff that has to be stored refrigerated, because otherwise it would start fermenting and essentially blow the top off the bottle.
Okay.
So,
sauerkraut,
veggie kraut, you know, like just recently I bought something that has sauerkraut, carrot, and ginger in it. Tastes pretty good.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
So, did you get it in like the organic food store?
Yes, I bought it in a health food store in the refrigerated part of the store.
So it's like sauerkraut, carrots, and ginger.
Yes. Yeah. There are various combinations available. This one is one of the nicer ones. I also bought some straight sauerkraut. Really nice. Anyway, so I have been eating a couple ounces of that in my salad. And whenever I do that, I do a lot better. And so that reminded me, of course, that I just ran out of my Genki powder. You know, we actually do sell the Genki fermented foods.
Right.
And we did a podcast about that earlier.
Yep. Yeah, not that long ago.
Yes. And so, of course, I immediately ordered more because I needed two, not just for the customers, but for me. So I'll have some soon. I'll be doing better. But today I had nothing.
So what have some of our customers been asking you lately? Because I know you get lots of customer calls, and I'm kind of curious if there's been any that have stood out in your mind.
Yeah, just recently a fellow called up and said, you know, I get these cysts. I get cysts in my armpit, and I get cysts in my gluteal fold, and I get cysts in my groin.
What's a gluteal fold?
Well, I guess you would call it the crack.
Oh, okay.
Somewhere below your waistline and above your anus.
Okay, so he gets these cysts.
So I'm saying, are you having any difficulty sweating? Mm-hmm. And he says, I don't sweat at all. And I'm saying, well, there we go. If you're having that problem, that must mean that there's not enough circulation. So the complete opposite of going to hot sweaty yoga, this poor fellow doesn't move and flush enough of the what shall we call them? The sweat glands, right? They're stagnant. They are clogging up from lack of use, sort of like little nozzles that are not being blown through often enough so that they gum up.
And through our sweat, of course, that's a way that we detox and also a way we cool off our body, right?
Right, yes, that's definitely that. But, anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, so, because I have a friend who also says that she never sweats, right?
Right. So and guess what that's a symptom of?
What is that a symptom of?
Thyroid imbalance, insufficiency. This poor person, you could probably find that she's also going to have fibrocystic breasts, painful periods, PMS, thinning hair, and who knows what else.
Right. So if we don't sweat, that's a signal that there's something really wrong and we're going to be building up toxins or we're going to be building up other problems, and eventually they're going to pop out like they did with this fellow in these cysts.
That's right. That's right. So the solution, of course, is, well, you do have to figure out some way to sweat, and you do need to figure out some way to upregulate the thyroid, because it's not normal.
Right.
And so then I asked him that question. He says, but my doctor says my thyroid values are normal.
Huh.
So then I said, but when doctors measured the thyroid, they don't distinguish whether the hormone is... the thyroxine, I forget now the horrendous name, but it's a one molecule of this hormone with four molecules of iodine around it. And what can happen is if you are poisoned with either bromine or fluorine, the hormone test reads correct, but your body doesn't read it correctly because it's a perverted version of the hormone, so it doesn't function correctly.
Oh.
So the hormone test says everything's fine, but you still have the symptoms. Hmm. So what do you trust? You read the sheet that says this is the list of your thyroid insufficiency symptoms, and you say, well, I have most of those. And then you go to a doctor, you say, I have most of those, and the doctor takes you to a lab and measures your blood and says, your blood is normal, then therefore everything's fine. Well, excuse me, but I'm feeling like heck.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much for telling me that I'm fine, even though I'm not.
Yeah. So that's quite a common problem, actually. A lot of people who call in here say, well, my doctor says that my... thyroid test comes up with a normal range, and my reply is, and the symptoms are what?
Right. So if I wanted to get my thyroid working at a better level, what are some of the things that I could do?
Well, the most common is natural iodine, either from seaweed or from atomic iodine, which is like a seaweed brewed into a liquid form that you could actually, it's in a tincture, alcohol tincture that you could add to your drinking water.
Okay.
Yeah, just, look up iodine on Life Enthusiasts. There are about five or six different choices.
Cool. And eating things that have kelp in it would probably be another good way to do that?
Perfect. Anything seaweed. kelp, bladder wreck, dulse,
but now with
konjac.
Fish?
Yes, fish too.
Fish too, okay.
Seafood, yes.
Seafood. Good.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that was an interesting one. People come up with all kinds of strange, intimate questions. And this other fellow called up and says, do you know what peyronie is?
Peyronie.
Yeah, peyronie. I says, yes, I know what peyronie is. A trigger finger, but on your pee-pee, right? The trigger finger is also known as de Pitrens. That's another lovely French name of a fellow after whom they named that syndrome. Trigger finger is when your finger sort of folds and curls and refuses to open up.
Oh, and that can happen down there?
And so when that happens on the finger, the solution is iodine, just like we mentioned on this other issue, strange enough.
Hmm.
And this down there, when a man's penis goes erect, and instead of staying pointed straight, it curves to a side. Instead of to the side. What are we going to say about it?
It's not straight.
It's a hockey stick, not a straight stick.
Okay.
Not a good thing, right?
No, that would be really not very good.
So what happens is it's similar to what happens on the finger. One side of the ligaments is shortened and the other side has not. So it just curves. Anyway, same story. Iodine. Get iodine and apply it. Sounds like I may have lost you, Scott.
No, I'm here. So,
okay, enormous amount of hiss came my way, but that's all right.
So iodine is one of those things that we're not getting enough of, and we need it for more than just our thyroid, obviously.
Oh, it's a totally magical thing. You know, one other important thing is that iodine is important for prevention of cancer.
Hmm.
Oh, and another thing. Also, it's involved in pregnancies. It prevents premature birth, it prevents what they call miscarriages, and it also prevents low birth weight and also I don't want to say something ugly, but stupid babies, you know.
Hmm.
Like people with lower intelligence. Curious actually. In fact, if I were contemplating pregnancy, you know, I would be telling my partner, definitely iodine, definitely magnesium, and definitely folate.
Hmm.
Now, folate is a funny thing, you know. It's been actually prescribed to women. In fact, I don't know if they did it in the U.S., but I know they did it in Canada. They actually ordered that folate be added to flour, you know, like fortified flour.
Yeah.
And so now everybody who eats bread or pasta or whatever is eating folate. In fact, too much of the folate. They just did some survey and found that 100% of Canadians have 100% daily requirement of folate, whether they're pregnant or not.
Oh.
So they're finding that, of course, folate's too much of a good thing. If you have a growing cancer, it actually accelerates it. So now they're finding that they're killing poor us protected Canadians by giving us too much folate.
Hmm. Well, I was just thinking also about iodine, and of course, one of the big selling points of salt at the grocery store is it's got iodine added to it. And I noticed on the Life Enthusiast Co-op website there's an article, and in it says in 1924 iodine was first added to table salt as a preventative measure, and by 1940 the practice was in general consumer use. Using iodized salt has no doubt been effective. It contains about 76 micrograms of iodine per gram. The average person consumes at least 3 grams of iodized salt daily, so they exceed the RDA by 150 micrograms. However, iodized salt has many other drawbacks. It contains aluminum and processing chemical residues. Its overuse creates the well-documented conditions associated with sodium, potassium imbalances, and goes on to say, with treated salt's convenient little addition to the Western diets, its integration accelerated by the huge expansion of fast food outlets and its abundant use there, one might think we've seen the last of iodine deficiencies, but it's not the case. Because we have this, where we have, chlorine, we're taking in all this chlorine, and that impacts the reserve of iodine that, that the body has.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Very, very difficult issue. And also the fluoridated water. Fluoride is an antagonist to iodine. And also flour used to be treated with iodine in order to put it through these fast-working kneading machines for in bread baking and other I don't know what the word is, industrial bakery.
Oh, yes.
Well, in about 1974 or 5, they switched to brominated flour instead of iodized flour. And that's another major problem. That's, as we were talking a little earlier, the bromine causes a lot of thyroid problems. Yeah, is right. So anyway, what you were saying is that, yes, the iodine was a great idea, but people have been staying away from salt.
Yes, that's right.
So we now have people who are not having the high blood pressure from too much sodium, but they are having thyroid problems from too little iodine.
Yeah.
All I can say, the technological solutions to nature are nature's problems can't seem to win. I mean, the one single overriding theme is that the industry can't seem to outsmart nature.
Yes, that's a fortunate thing.
Yeah. So okay, folate. Folate for women who contemplate pregnancy. Again, folic acid definitely helps with preventing several birth defects type of things. Now, there's, of course, you can go to a pharmacy and buy a folate and concentrate, but you could also just contemplate, what is folic? What is foliage?
Greens?
Yeah, the green leaves. So where would I get folate? Oh, in dark green leafy vegetables. So anything from mustard tops to kale to, the most dense ones will be things like wheatgrass, barley grass, alfalfa leaf juice, and chlorella spirulina and blue-green algae.
There you go.
There goes yet another walking ad for our superfood blends.
That's right. That's right.
Want to have healthy babies?
Drink Exela.
Eat the superfoods.
So important.
Right.
So I think we have time for one more story. What was another question that one of our customers gave us this past week or so?
Oh, I'm drawing a blank here. Ask me something somebody asked you. Athlete's foot?
Oh, well, actually, since I've been back from my trip to Mexico, I've had this kind of crack in the skin between two of my toes, and a friend of mine said, well, that's athlete's foot, and you need to put on some cream or something. And all I was doing before, and I've been doing since, is putting on some magnesium oil and some coconut oil, depending on which magnesium gel, coconut oil, depending on which I had at hand when I thought of it, right?
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been particularly painful, and I haven't. But I just noticed that the skin is really rough and kind of feels like it's falling off and that sort of stuff. So athlete's foot, I understand, is a fungus.
Right.
And
it is.
So fungus will
only live in a oxygen deprived, in a wet, moist, in a dark, in a acidic terrain.
Mm.
So all of the above. So you're eliminating. I mean, a lot of the detoxing that you've done has disturbed a bunch of the toxins, so they are now traveling. They're out pushed to the margins, so to speak. So the feet are, you know, by reason of gravity, that's where a lot of the toxins accumulate. Mm-hmm. In fact, you will notice the following. The two most smelly areas, or maybe three most smelly areas in the human body, will be the feet, the pelvic area, and the armpits.
Yeah.
And, well, the armpits by virtue of the sweat, but you will also notice, or maybe if you go look at the physiology books, the lymphatic system has these, I keep calling them waterfalls, you know, like where the lymphatic system interfaces with the blood system is just below your clavicles, way up high, just on in the middle of your chest, just below the clavicles.
Okay.
No, I don't mean middle of your chest, in the space between your shoulder and your neck, on both sides.
Okay, yeah, all right.
So if you, for instance, take a finger and dig into the space just below your clavicle, you would typically find that area to be exceedingly painful. You can find these spots just below the clavicle that will actually hurt. And these are the two spots that you should often gently massage.
Right. They teach that in kinesiology, too.
Yeah, but anyway, so if these things are, you will notice that they're right next to the armpits, so that's the first station for the toxins, so they'll be eliminated through there. That's the first sewage outlet, and then the second is, you know, you have these what are they called, lymph nodes down in the groin, and so that's where the other smelly parts will be. And the last will be the feet. So anyway, going back to the athlete's foot, we have the need for you to start walking barefoot out on the beach. I think it's a time for another trip to the Caribbean.
Yes, okay, I'm all for that.
'Cause I don't think you can easily do that in our 50 degrees north weather, right?
No, that's right.
Air, you know, access to air is one of the important things you can do, and the second thing that really works well is a salt scrub. Essentially taking fine salt mixed with some oil, you know, sesame oil, olive oil, something oil. We actually have some of these available. They're called either salt scrub or salt peeling. And we have some of these in the Javeti brand on the Life Enthusiast website. And you can take this mix of the oil and salt and just scrub it into your feet. It's actually really good at removing cracked skin as well.
Oh, cool.
If you have skin on your heels that's rough and all that, that sort of oil with salt mix is really very helpful. Yeah. So yeah, that's the thing. So we need to think all the way from the top down to with the athlete's foot, you know, alkalize and scrub.
Alkalize and scrub, and then the salt, the natural salt helps.
Well, it's self-sterile, right? So anything, you know, it's like pickling in salt. I'm trying to remember when we were, when I was younger, we used to be sent to the garden to kill slugs.
And we put salt on them.
Yeah, we salted the slugs, and of course, the osmotic pressure just totally destroyed the little creature. Because the salt would require water, and it would suck the water right out of the body of the animal.
Oh, okay, that's how it would work.
That's how it kills him. And so what we do with our feet is when we rub them with salt, we essentially pull all the fluids out of the tissue that we have rubbed it into. So
okay.
in this case, it will dry out the overly wet skin on the feet.
Yeah, right. Huh.
Simple.
Yeah, simple and natural. And what are the side effects of putting this on my feet?
I can't think of them. They'll smell nice.
I'm not going to have high blood pressure or...
No. This salt won't make it
into... Epileptic attacks?
No. This will not get inside of you.
You mean you don't have this big, long list that my doctor would make me read before he would give me a prescription?
Right, you are. This is such a funny thing. I remember watching a commercial in a show again. And they just have this portrait or something, like an imagery of, I don't know, two women frolicking on the beach or in the park or something, you know, like a perfectly happy scene. And then they say, well, take this drug, it's a solution for such and such a problem. And then this fast, low-key voice, by the way, if you do this, you are expected to maybe die of cancer, have da-da-da, lose this organ.
Really talks fast, too.
Oh, yeah, totally. But if you listen to it, it's like you could die, you could lose organs, you could lose life, you know, like all kinds of serious stuff. And then they switch into the normal voice and say, talk to your doctor.
Talk to your doctor, yep.
So listen, you need to talk to your doctor because Scott and I are not licensed. We're not doctors. We're not practicing medicine. This really is just a comedy hour.
So I wanted to ask you, that salt peeling that you talked about, that's made from Himalayan salt, right?
Yes.
Very, very cool, which is some of the purest salt that we can get. And on one of the Himalayan salt pages, there was this quote I just wanted to share with everybody because I just sort of made me sit up and take notice. And, of course, having just made the disclaimer, I think the quote is perfect. So it's from Pilinius, a Roman writer, who lived from 23 to 79 A.D., 2,000 years ago plus, and he declared, quote, crystal salt is the most important remedy for mankind, end quote. So I thought, oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, the truth be said, you know, salt is really important to all of our bodily fluids. I mean, if you lose the salt, if you lose the balance of your electrolytes, you'll die.
Yeah.
You know, we have the calcium-magnesium balance, which is all important, and we have the sodium-potassium balance. Potassium on the inside of the cell, sodium on the outside of the cell. If the balance is incorrect, you will either not push nutrients in or toxins out of the cell. So this reminded me of that joke I think we told earlier about the body parts that were arguing who was really the most important of the lot.
That's right.
And it was the anal sphincter
who won.
So in the same way, if you don't have enough sodium, the toxins will not be removed from within your cells. The pump will not work in the direction from within the cell out. That's what sodium does. Just like we talked about the slug, there has to be sodium to pull the toxins out of the cells. So if you completely remove your sodium intake, you may end up being a bit toxic.
Yep, that's really important.
So don't be so afraid of salt, especially if you eat proteins, lots of proteins, because that's what's needed. Sodium's needed to pull out the metabolites of protein ingestion.
Yeah. Well, and I think what we're really saying is make sure that you have good quality, pure salt, not the manufactured, you know, talk about white salt, white sugar, white flour, you know, avoid all of those things if you want to have good, long, vibrant, healthy lives, because that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is pure salt, very pure salt that's actually got a crystalline structure in it because of the way that it's, you know, it really came from the primordial oceans of millions of years ago, and we're able to get access to that, which is very different than the salt that you see on the grocery store, you know, for a couple bucks.
Right. Different.
Different. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to know more about salt and iodine and magnesium and all these other good things, where could they go?
Life-enthusiast.com. Come read it while it's still available. Or call us at 1-866-543-3388. We're here from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific. And we're happy to take your questions and sometimes even give answers. And on a good day, we're not even cranky about it.
That's right. Even on a bad day, we're not that cranky when it comes to answering questions because we love it.
Yes. Anyway, this is Life Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you. And thank you for listening.